Welcome back to another episode of the Jasmine Star Show. I have to let you know that one of my favorite ways to connect with you is here on the podcast and via text message. And today I am combining both of the things that I love. And I'm happy to combine both of them because at the time of this recording, it's 4:47 in the morning. So I get to manage text message and create podcasts before the baby wakes up and before I officially start my work day. So the way that this conversation is going to work is I send weekly text messages. Most of the time, they're just like my thoughts, a little bit of inspiration, a little bit of kick in the pants. And I love connecting with people and responding. But recently, I decided to do something a little bit different. I said, hey, via text message. And I was like, do you have any questions? Send me your questions. I am planning to share a few of them on the podcast. So think of this as like a Q&A, but where I'm asking the Q's and also giving the A's. Hey, okay. So I answer questions between life and business and a lot of everything on the in-between. So I chose a few to answer today in case any if you have these questions as well. Now, this is the first time I've ever done it like this. So if we like it, let me know. If we're not fans, still let me know. I don't want to do it again if it's not a right fit. Okay, so let's dive in. And I have to let you know, I haven't seen these questions yet. So our podcast producer put these questions and said, don't read them until you start recording the podcast so that we get the realest, rawest, and most honest opinion. So let's get this party started. And is it just me? Does it sound like I have morning voice? I think it sounds like I have morning voice. And you want to know what? We're rolling with it. Wendy asks the following. How do I find confidence to succeed when so many people don't believe in me? I don't have a good support system and it's slowly weighed down and now I'm completely stopped. I'm not one to quit. I know to keep my head up and push through. I know everything I'm supposed to do. I guess I'm at a point of being too sad to do it. So I guess my question is, for the person who has always kept their head up, stayed positive, and pushed through, how do you keep going? Wow. We are starting with a doozy. I think what strongly comes up as I read Wendy's question is how sad she is. And I don't think that sadness is a bad thing. I don't think that anger is a bad thing. I don't think that joy is a bad thing or happiness. I believe that we have been created with the full gamut of emotions, and sadness is one of them. One of the things that draws me to cinematographers, writers, and painters is that each creation has always been an iteration of where the creator was at that time in his or her life. So when you think of Picasso's Blue Period, he was going through a lot when he was creating all of those works of art during that time. And I think that if I look back at my career, some of the strongest or things that I'm most proud of were on the back end of being really, really sad. I think if I was being totally honest, which I am, I think I'm creating something really beautiful right now, and I'm struggling being sad. I've talked about it on the podcast quite often about my struggles with depression, and I want to be very clear that after years of doing work, I notice flickers of when I'm teetering toward it. These are the times where I know that it's time to get into therapy and it's time to work through some unresolved things. Like, I feel it in my bones. So even though I feel sadness, it doesn't stop me from doing the thing that I feel I've been put on this earth to do. So Wendy, you might be feeling the same or you might be feeling different, but the emotion that we both share, which is sadness, is there. The question then remains, do you want to take a break or do you want to keep moving? I'm going to ask you, I'm going to invite you not to stop or to quit, but simply to take a break if that's what you need. But please also remember that nobody else can make you feel something. You are the only person who can make you feel something. A couple days ago, I was talking to my husband and my business partner, and I was just like, well, I'm talking to you and you make me feel like I'm going crazy. Like, you make me feel like I'm crazy when I'm very logical and I'm trying to present this to you. And he's just like, he straight up used my words on him. He's like, I can't make you feel anything. You feel like you're going crazy when I'm just having a different opinion. And I was like, how dare you use my words on me? But if we're having an honest conversation, Wendy, your family isn't making you feel anything, or your support system isn't making you feel anything. You feel that, and that's okay. But friend to friend, business owner to business owner, you have to make the decision to stay in control. You're either going to be in control and say, I'm taking a break, which is fine, or you're going to be in control and say, I'm going to keep on moving on despite my sadness. I just don't want you to quit if you genuinely love what you do. And as a side note, I'm going to invite you, the same way I'm inviting myself, to get back in to therapy and to talk it through. Because it's never, from my experience, it's never been about the situation that makes me sad. It's something else that is going unaddressed that's bringing up emotions. Because for all intents and purposes, I'll be very honest, I love the people I work with. I love the social curator team. I look at them and I'm blown away. I love my husband. I love my daughter, and they're healthy and my family is good. For all intents and purposes, anybody could look at this and be like, why are you sad? And the thing that I know to be true is that you don't ever feel an emotion around what's immediately around you or what's immediately going on. There's always something under the surface. And so my job and your job, Wendy, is to figure out the origin of the sadness and address that, not the opinions of others or life as it is. I hope that helps. Okay. Whew. See, this is why I hate not looking at these questions, because then I end up, am I oversharing? I feel like I'm oversharing, and it's okay. Like, I'm here with it. I want this podcast to feel like a division of me, of where I am, because I think at some point in the future, I'll listen back to this and be proud of how far I've come and not posture and be somebody I'm not. Okay. So Maria asked, is there any specific strategy to launch with luxury prices when many competitors price much lower? I'm in the quilt industry. Ooh, is there a specific strategy to launch with luxury prices? You know, I have to tell you, I believe that luxury is built on brand and not on price. Oftentimes, prices are intercorrelated with branding, but it's never just the price. And so, do I think you can absolutely charge luxury prices for a quilt? Yes, go on. You should. But for anybody who's listening who's not trying to sell a quilt and are wondering the same thing, like, can I launch with luxury prices? Yes, of course. But you can't do it without having a brand. You can't do it without somebody being able to choose your business over somebody else's. And in Maria's case, I'm sorry. Yes, Maria. I was like, are my eyes failing me? Is it Marla or Maria? No, it's Maria. So in Maria's case, she's saying, will somebody pay, let's just say, twice as much for my quilt than somebody else's? And the answer will be yes. There will always be somebody who is willing to pay more when the competitors are offering something for less. That exists everywhere. We see it in everyday life. But the question is, does that consumer's experience factor into that decision? Yeah. So then the question then becomes, Maria, what are you doing to create experiences? So Seth Godin defines a brand as a series and a set of expectations and stories and memories that taken together account for a consumer's decision to choose one business over another. Yes, I memorized his definition of a brand because for years I couldn't figure it out. But I'm like, if I just memorize how he defines it, it'll become like a thing in my mind. But you know, your girl's a little hood, not the sharpest tool in the shed. So somebody once described a brand to me as what somebody says when you walk out of the room about you. And that definition of brand, that made sense to me. So Maria, your objective when you launch your luxury quilt business is to build a brand. Everything should be on point. You should speak to your target demographic. You should make references that they get. Far before you actually ask somebody for a sale, how incredible would it be for you to create helpful, empowering, educational, entertaining content about quilting so that somebody feels connected, not just to you, but to what you're creating. Because at the end of the day, if I need a quilt and your quilt is twice as much as anybody else's, I need to justify spending that amount with you. And it could be exclusivity, but by and large, when people are spending a lot of money on purses, on shoes, on jeans, it's because that purchase makes them feel something. So you must ask yourself, what does my dream customer want to feel? Do I need to sell the quilt based on history, on story, on eco-friendly? Like, what is your experience? What do you want to give your dream customer? But that should be based entirely on what they themselves want. So this is where the hard work comes in. People are like, no, like people will just get it. Like they'll just see it and they'll see the quality of the tools I'm using or how I stitch. And they're going to see that I source these materials from the Andes Mountains and fine. But that alone, it won't be enough if that's not what your dream customer really values and adds value to. So the answer, Maria, is yes, you can launch with luxury prices, but I'm going to caution you, without doing the back end work about building that brand before, it's going to be very hard to get sales. Not because your quilts aren't worth it, but simply because the messaging around what your target demographic is really wanting and valuing might not be there. So if you're willing to do the work on the front end, well, then I'm going to clap you up. Get dim quilts out into the world. Okay, Sherry asked, do you honestly stick to the same morning routine every day? Like every day? Hey, I did not see this question in advance and I already told you that I was recording at 4:47 in the morning. Well, it's now 5:03. Yeah, I would say that my morning routine remains intact over 90% of the time. I don't have a morning routine when I'm on vacation. And I don't have a morning routine the way I have a morning routine now when I'm traveling. So vacation's personal, travel, business. I've noticed that when I travel, like my body does just different things. It functions differently. And when I travel for personal vacation, it's like this whole beehive in my mind goes quiet. Like when I am on when I get ready to go on vacation or when I'm on vacation, it's like a beekeeper goes into my brain, fills it up with like smoke and all the bees just settle and I feel in a very different state of flow. So no, I don't have a morning routine. I let my body just do what my body's going to do. Sleep in, take naps, do 2 hours of yoga, whatever it is. Now, when I go for business, that beehive, that's on a different hum. It's like the bees, you know, they're busy working and then now they're like dancing the Macarena. It goes into high drive because when I travel for work, I'm still responsible for all the things that I have to do within the organization, but then I'm still required to do the thing that I was hired to do, right? Which is to speak and to teach. So it's an overdrive. But the rest of the time when I am at home, I am definitely awake before 5 a.m. It's just the time that my body wakes up. In fact, this morning, normally my body just like, bing, like it is up at 4:30. Today I woke up at 4:07. And so I just took a little time. Like I prayed, I meditated, I journaled, and then I just sat down. I had to do my work. And that's my morning routine, like legitimately like clockwork. And I don't think that a morning routine is necessary to be successful. Please hear that I am not saying, oh, you should be waking up at 4:30. Heck no. Heck no. We all have different circadian rhythms. Like you might be a night owl. You might get your most work done at a different point in time. Great. No problem. I have zero judgment. But for me, I have so much going on And there is such a small team. And I have such big ambitions. And that at the end of the day, if there is not somebody within the company to do something that needs to get done, then I must do it. Not because I'm freaking Joan of Arc of my business, but because it needs to get done to get to where I want to go. And so that requires a boatload of discipline. And it requires a boatload of taking care of myself. In my morning routine, it starts with prayer, meditation, journaling. It starts with coffee. It starts with grounding. Every morning I wake up, it's black outside. And I love it. It's quiet. I get to just think and be entirely on my own, which is why I like recording this podcast right now, because it's just me time. All right, Kelsey, as a solo entrepreneur, what is the best way to approach having a baby and creating space for maternity leave when it's all on your shoulders? Oh, Kelsey, God bless you, girl. I think a little bit of the difference between Kelsey's situation and my situation in that maternity leave, when you have a baby biologically, when you have a baby in your belly, is that you have a general idea, God willing, when that baby's coming. In my situation, we had 24-hour notice that a baby girl had been born. And so we threw everything in bags and we drove to Las Vegas. And so to plan for maternity leave was like laughable, because I was like, we're in the middle. Like, we're smack dab in the middle of preparing for a promotion. So I didn't have a maternity leave. I worked through it, which is so crazy when I say that out loud, when I think about it. A little bit of the backstory is that we ended up having to stay in Las Vegas for almost 5 weeks just due to some complications with the adoption. So my husband, my brand new daughter, and I stayed in a hotel room. So it was about 40 degrees in Nevada at the time, and it was very cold outside, so we weren't taking a baby. And so we lived and we worked in a hotel room. And by the time we got back into the house, we had already created our lives as what it looked like with a baby and had a really supportive team. But you, Kelsey, are saying, I do it all on my own. Well, I'm not a mathematician, right? But if you are doing everything on your own and you're going to bring a human into the world, and this human, as much as you love it, is like a tyrannist and a dictator, and the life that you once thought you knew, you can kiss that goodbye. Sayonara, in all of the best ways. But life as you know it will never be the same. So what I hear, Kelsey, is that you want something magical to happen. You want to do things as a solo entrepreneur that you were entirely responsible for, that you will no longer be able to do. So if you know that going into maternity leave, well then call it for what it is. Make a list of everything you will not be able to do at that time. Will you be able to send emails? I don't know. But if the answer is no, get an outgoing inbox saying, I'm not responding for whatever time it is for you. 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, whatever. If you don't think you're going to be able to create content and you can't batch that content in advance and then plan it while you're out for your maternity leave, and just for the sake of this conversation, let's just say 8 weeks. It could be definitely more, or it could be less, whatever you decide. So I'm just going to say 8 weeks. If you don't think you're going to be creating content for the next 8 weeks and you haven't batched it, then what you need to do is put out all on your social platforms, I'm taking maternity leave, I'll be back in 8 weeks. If you don't think that you will be able to do X, I don't know what you do as a business owner, but if it's to fill orders, if it's to edit, if it's to crochet, if it's to walk dogs, if it's anything, anything that anybody is expecting of you, then you need to let everybody know, I'm out, because you're the only person in your business who does this. And if you aren't willing to bring somebody in to train people to create content for you or respond to emails or fulfill orders, then you must let everybody know, I'm out. And I always believe that we should, as business owners, under-promise and over-deliver. Sorry, I flubbed my words, but I'm going to keep on going with it. Under-promise and over-deliver, which means if you tell people, I'm not responding to email for the next 8 weeks, and then you respond at week six, well, they're like pleasantly surprised. Kelsey's on top of it. If you tell people, I won't respond to emails for the next 4 weeks and then it takes you 6 weeks to reply, ooh, that's a bad look. It is better to let everybody know not to expect anything from you for a designated time. And then if on your terms, Kelsey, you can come back sooner, great. But at the end of the day, Kelsey, your baby will likely be your priority. And if then that is the case, you must set up everything in your business to make that baby your priority and let everybody know they can't expect anything from you for the next amount of time. Nikki asked, I am an accessories company. I keep trying to figure out what problem people have that I'm here to solve without talking about price. So Nikki, I believe she's asking that I'm a huge proponent that as business owners, we're here to solve problems. And the better you are at solving problems, the more likely you'll get more customers, you'll keep them longer, you'll create evangelists. And Nikki's like, yo, I design jewelry. What problem am I solving? And I think that for by and large, we as business owners do all solve problems, but they might not be as distinct as per se, like social curator. We know the problem we solve at Social Curator. There are busy business owners who are stressed out and don't know how to show up on social media with a plan and with a strategy. Okay, great. We want people to save time. Perfect. We want them to feel confident. We want them to get more followers, but not followers for vanity metric sake. We want people to get more followers to turn them into customers and get sales on the back of social media. That's a problem that we solve. Now, when it comes to jewelry, when I'm thinking right now of the jewelry designers that I follow most of the time, oh, there's this one, I don't even know. I'm going to mention her. Her name is Dylan Lex. Now, she creates jewelry that is so over the top. It's so extra. I've never even bought a piece of jewelry from the company, although I probably will because I'm just obsessed with how she shows up and teaches people how to style. So I always think, like, your girl is on the struggle bus. Like, I don't think I have style. I think I'm stylish. Does that make sense? Like, I don't think anybody looks at me as like, dang, that girl has style. I just think that, like, hey, I can kind of pull like a jumpsuit on and add gold earrings. Like, ooh, okay. But this girl, Dylan, she has mad style. So she teaches people how to style her clothes and then incorporates her jewelry line into it. She teaches people how to layer jewelry. Like, she teaches people how to take vintage clothing and then like tailor it or make it her own. And since starting her jewelry line, I've noticed that she's also incorporating pieces of fashion attire into it, which I thought was fascinating. But let's get back to your question, Nikki. What problem do you solve? Well, if we don't solve a problem directly with the thing that we're selling, like jewelry. Maybe the problem you solve is like somebody doesn't really know what type of jewelry is good for their clavicle, or people don't really know the weight of an earring, right? I mean, there are some things that you can create in long that way, but are there other quote unquote problems that you could solve in relation to your jewelry? Similar to Dylan. She's not solving a problem per se with her necklaces or earrings. She's saying a lot of people struggle with finding style and pairing outfits with the right jewelry. And then she uses her jewelry as examples. So my advice, if you don't solve a problem distinctly, is to find a tangential, an adjacent problem that you could solve and then sprinkle in what it is you sell. Okay, lastly, rounding these out. Sorry, I feel like I'm so long-winded. Good Lord. It's like, girl, stop talking. I know. Candace is going to close out. I've taken a long break from posting on social media. What are some things I should consider before jumping back in? Candace, nothing. And I mean this as nice as possible. Nothing. You don't need to consider anything. This is, you know, oh gosh, listen. This is me before my second cup of coffee. Y'all, why are we always considering? Like, why don't we just do? And I think that I'm sorry, I should soften up a little bit, but I just feel like when we consider, we waste time. And time is the most valuable thing that any of us own. And I know I'm one of the crazies. I was 25 years old and I saw my mom for 8.5 years struggle with brain cancer. She lost all those years of her life when she couldn't get up out of bed. And I think to myself, my God, what can I do? God forbid I ever have that big of a health scare. God forbid I lose those years of my life being relegated to my bed. So God forbid that happens, but why not me act and behave as if we aren't guaranteed tomorrow? If you knew you were not going to be here tomorrow, would you consider what you were putting out on social media? Or would you simply put something out on social media and let the market speak back to you? Action, 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 action. I don't want to sound like Nike, but friends, just do it. Your action will bring clarity. Your thoughts will add ambiguity. Oh, all right, we're going to close this thing out. So if you've enjoyed this Q&A session, text me. Let me know, because I might do another one. And if we weren't feeling this, if this was not the vibe, let's not do it. And if I don't hear from you, I'm going to assume you didn't like it. I never assume they didn't talk back to me. They must love it. No, no, no. When people like something, they let you know. If you don't like something and you want to be nice and you're like, it's not my, I'm not going to say anything mean to her. No, no, no. It's not mean. I just am here to create for you. If it's not your vibe, let me know. You can send me a text and we can make it easy. You can go to jasminestar.com/text me, or you can click on the link in the episode description. Now we are actually creating a URL, because when I was like, text 949, people were like, I'm not going to sit here and type in all these numbers, but I might remember jasminestar.com/text me. As a member of my text community, you can expect business tips, inspirational text, mindset hacks, and of course, like we just did today, get your burning questions answered on the podcast. I can't wait to hear from you, and I hope you have a beautiful day. Bye, y'all.